شهر الطاعة والإيمان، شهر الرحمة والغفران، شهر الطاعة والإيمان، شهر الرحمة والغفران.
أيامك خير الأيام
يا رمضان،
يا شهر صيام وقيام
يا رمضان.
أيامك خير الأيام
يا رمضان،
يا شهر صيام وقيام
يا رمضان.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين. سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear brothers and sisters, inshallah, you're benefiting maximally from the provisions of this holy month. These days aren't to be compensated, they're not going to return. Try to avoid as much as you can anything which distracts you from Allah. And this is one of the main purposes behind fasting, because we're dealing with the fasting not only of the stomach, but also of other limbs. And this is the reality of fasting. Now, if you remember, we were reading a passage from Sayyid Haydar Amuli's book on the inner dimensions of rituals. And in relation to fasting, he had recited or had written a number of ahadith emphasizing the rewards and the very high nature, lofty degree that fasting bears with it. And then he said this lofty nature and this superiority that fasting has can be traced back to two things. The first was because there's no riya. The person who is fasting on a par with the Sharia, they are relatively riya-free. Now, the second point, that why all these blessings and favours of the month of Ramadan fasting actually bears, is traced to a second point also, and that is that fasting is a conquering force against the enemy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And that's the shaitan, Iblis, and the shayateen, the satans. Iblis is an agent of Allah. We should never see Iblis as independent from Allah. That would be a compromised tawheed, making one Zoroastrian in the hereafter. Iblis can't do anything without Allah's permission, and Iblis has been assigned a role, an agency in the overall cause and effect cosmos that we have. He has a role to play, and the role is those who forget Allah, Iblis will enter the equation and start his temptations. But you started it, you did something wrong, and now Iblis is merely abiding by his duty. Although this is not a discussion I wanted to open up here, and I won't, but Iblis is acting on a par with Allah's duty. Iblis did something wrong, very wrong, and he fell spiritually as a result of his sin. And he's going to pay for it. However, he asked something from Allah, and Allah granted him his wish. And then gave him this duty, that whenever people forget Allah, you then incite them, you then enter partnership with them, tempt them to do wrong. That's cause and effect. And the enforcer of this cause and of the effect is Iblis and his army. In the same way that Jibreel, wherever there's knowledge manifested, Allah's knowledge manifests anywhere in the world, these are Jibra'ili forces in play. Wherever there's deviation in the world, misguidance, these are Iblisi forces in play. But Allah is the possessor of knowledge, And Allah is the misguider. No one is misguiding outside the jurisdiction of Allah. Allah, but it works through a system of cause and effect. You forget Allah through your own actions of forgetting Allah, you would be now encountering the forces of misguidance. But it was your doing. Anyway, here, fasting is a conquering force against the Satans. And Shaitan only becomes stronger, according here to the writings of Sayyid Haydar Omali, through the whims and lusts that people have, the animalistic traits. The satanic forces within become strengthened. And fasting, looking at its hunger dimension, fasting breaks all the dimensions of lusts which count as instruments of Shaitan. Because without these instruments, Shaitan cannot function. So, Shaitan works through precipitating the precipitation of animalistic traits. If you were to experience hunger, this lowers and suppresses your animalistic traits, your soul's whims and lusts. And then Iblis cannot be sovereign over you. So here we see even this physical fasting has many benefits. In one hadith it reads, Inna shaytana yajri fibna adama majrad dame. فَذَيِّقُوا مَجَارِيَهُ بِالْجُوءِ. That Shaitan, he permeates in the offspring of Adam, in all humans, he permeates through and penetrates through them, through the vessels of the blood, meaning everywhere in their body. Not necessarily, you know, in those blood vessels and the arteries and veins, but in the same way that blood vessels appear throughout your body, penetrate all parts of your body, here too, Iblis works through these channels through in your body, through the blood vessels. And then the prescription is given, restrict those vessels by means of hunger. Restrict those channels through which Iblis is working through you, through your blood vessels. Restrict it. Constrict it. How? Through hunger. If you do away, you can do away with those animalistic traits by experiencing more and more hunger. Now, here, it's because of traditions like this that the esoteric interpretation of verses, like in chapter 5, verse 3, Hurrimat alaykum, prohibited upon you are the following. Al-maytato carcasses. That has an esoteric meaning too, but we're not dealing with that now. If you remember, we touched upon the munkhanigato wal-mawgudato, the animal strangled to death and the animal beaten to death. It's haram to consume them. They're najis because they weren't slaughtered properly. If you have a slaughtered animal here and an animal beaten to death here, they look the same, but one is najis, one is pure. That's why the esoteric dimension of the animal beaten to death or strangled to death was someone who strangles and beats their souls out of riya. When people see them, it's just like a true mystic. But these people are essentially najis because they're doing it out of riya. Whereas the true mystic isn't, because they're doing it for Allah and there's no riya. Anyway, here, wad dam, prohibited upon you, is blood. Here, okay, blood, the physical blood, many people used to drink it, it's now prohibited. But the esoteric dimension of that is prohibited upon you is for you to be preoccupied with whims and lusts of the soul, animalistic traits. If you don't restrict yourself, if you don't constrict those esoteric blood vessels through which animalistic traits predominate over you, here you would be essentially and existentially najis, because you're predominated by animalistic traits. So when the verse says forbidden for you are, for example, blood, that's only the letter of the law speaking. But esoterically, it's forbidden for you to be predominated by animalistic traits. Now look, here, in the same verse at the end, towards the end, it reads, Al-yawma ya'isa alladhina kafaru min dinikum. Today, after you've forbidden yourself successfully from, there are six or seven things the verse mentions, or maybe more. But it's not only the physical thing, is you have to prohibit the esoteric thing too. If you do that today, those disbelievers will despair from your religion. They will despair in being able to defeat your religion. When? When will they despair? Not if you only suffice with the letter of the law and not consume blood or carcasses. No. It's only when you succeed esoterically. And for example, you have no riyah with the animal example we spoke about. And for example, you're not predominated by animalistic traits. Each of these animals, like the meat of pigs, for example, that upon which other than Allah is dedicated, all these have esoteric meanings. If you master all those, that will be the day when the enemies will despair defeating your religion. It's only then, when you abide by the zahir and the batin of this verse, it will only be then, al-yawma akmaltu lakum dinakum, only then Allah says he's perfected for you your religion. And then continues, wa atmamtu alaykum ni'mati, and I've completed alaykum upon you my ni'mah. Now here Allah Tabaraka proves and illustrates and demonstrates wherever ni'mah is mentioned in the Quran, it's in relation to wilaya, and therefore in relation to the wali of the time. Now 1400 years ago, this verse was in relation to Amir al-Mu'mineen, the incident at Ghadir Khum, and he was the wali of the time. Who is the wali today? The 12th Imam. He is our leader. He is working day and night. He's governing, but he's doing everything in occultation. If you want to see the Imam of your time, if you want this ni'mah to be completed and for you to see him, albeit his barzakhi reality, although seeing the physical reality is not impossible, but there's no need to have to see the physical Imam. He can appear before you with his barzakhi reality in dreams or in visions whilst awake. But to do that, these things which are prohibited over you, you have to abide by, both according to the letter and to the spirit of it. That's difficult. Why do you think people despaired in defeating Islam and defeating the Islamic Revolution? Because we had a leader like Imam Khomeini being continued like the likes of Imam Khomeini. As long as these people are here, one of the essences of fasting, he says, أَمَا تَسْمَوْ قَوْلَ مَرْيَمَ بِنْتَ إِمْرَانَ. Haven't you heard, didn't you hear what Lady Maryam said? Alayha salam. We mentioned this verse, I think, in the opening lecture also, lecture number one. She said, إِنِّي نَذَرْتُ لِلرَّحْمَانِ سَوْمَا فَلَنْ أُكَلِّمَ الْيَوْمَ إِنْسِيَّا. That, verily, for Allah's sake, for the all-beneficent, I am making a vow of soma. Imam says this means samta. It's a vow of silence. Not a silence of not having food or drink, because she did have food and drink. It was a silence of the limbs. How did this manifest in this context? She wouldn't speak with anyone. Here it was the mouth, silence of the mouth, the limb of the mouth. This mouth has to be silenced. But the mouth is only one, the tongue is only one application. The fasting of the tongue, where the tongue is controlled, is only one manifestation. This applies to silencing all the limbs. And here, Sayyid Haydar Omali then goes through different faculties of the body. One by one, he goes through them and teaches us how to silence those limbs accordingly. The first one he touches upon is the silence of the tongue. And he mentions this verse of in relation to Lady Maryam, alayha salam. The silence of the tongue. Now, here in chapter 23, verse 3, وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ عَنِ اللَّغْوِ مُؤْرِضُونَ, those who turn away. This verse is, and this chapter, the opening verses, are in relation to the believers. They turn away from ill speech, from vain, futile talk. Look, this is a sign of a believer, that they refrain from any talking which is deemed futile. Now, that talking may be haram, it may be a sin, like when you talk arrogantly, when you talk in a way that you hurt others, where you talk and backbite. These are all actions and functions of the tongue. You may commit slander and many other ills of the tongue. And here, you have to turn away from them. This is step one of turning away. I think I mentioned that Ayatollah Abdul Karim Kashmiri had this prescription of silence. But this prescription of silence of the tongue given to him in a vision where he saw Lady Ma'suma alayha salam say, I'm giving this prescription of silence to you. Now, his degree was so high that he won't suffice with controlling the tongue, silencing the tongue from haram, from forbidden talk. No, he goes much beyond that. Sometimes people may gossip or talk worldly talk, which has no benefit for one's hereafter. Here too, it may not be haram, okay, as long as there's no backbiting and other ills, but it's gossiping. At least it's unethical, or talking about worldly things, or posing in a way. These things too, someone who's been given the prescription of silence would avoid this kind of talk. It's not haram according to the Sharia, but it will limit their elevation in the hereafter because they're contaminating themselves. And then there's a turning away from any halal talk, but it's not wajib. Any talk which isn't wajib, it may be okay to speak about it. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing unethical with it. And there's nothing un-Sharia-like about it. But it's not wajib to, say. Controlling this limb or faculty of talking, it even entails this, that you avoid even the halal talk, which are not wajib, obligatory, essential for you. Now, this covers a wide range of examples. I'll just give two or three. For example, When a husband goes to the wife and says, "What do we have for dinner tonight?" Oh, look, that was unnecessary. Even if they don't groan, because if they groan, although I don't want to go into the traditions right now, but I've spoken about this before, that if they do groan, that will be compromising their tawheed in action. Why are they groaning? Everything is from Allah. But here, they say, "What do we have for dinner tonight?" That's it. This is halal talk. It's not unethical, but it's not wajib. Now, please don't start doing this from tomorrow, because it's unnatural. You have to grow slowly but surely. You have to have a strong tawhidi background. And a lot of tawhid has to be incorporated within you. The more it's incorporated, then you can rise the levels of turning away and controlling and silencing the talking faculty. But if you start from tomorrow, when you have no tawhid incorporated within you, you're playing. You're an actor. And actually, that acting can act as a veil against you and make you complacent, self-conceited, and so on and so forth. And you'll be very arrogant, and there's no humility in you, because you really think you're someone by doing such an action. But it's a game, it's a play. You're acting. Or, for example, what are you doing in the weekend? You ask someone, "What are you doing in the weekend?" Well, that's not wajib. It's none of your business either. If you want to take them out or invite them, well, say, "I invite you to our house." That's a mustahab thing to do. It's a good deed, and you can speak that much. But don't bring introductory statements before it, before you give your invitation, because it's not necessary. The soul shouldn't be preoccupied with unnecessary words coming out of your mouth. Leave the soul alone. Let it be free to itself in solitude. Don't over-occupy it. Don't give it too many duties. Don't speak. Unless it's wajib to speak. And saying dhikrullah, pontificating, doing things for the hereafter, speaking that much, that's okay. But anything which isn't wajib for your salvation, why speak about it? Okay? Or, for example, how is X person doing? Where is that taking you? Why are you asking about it? I mean, if you're asking so you want to provide relief or help for that person, that's another matter. It's mustahab. It's recommended. It may even be obligatory given the circumstances. But if it's only for the fun of it, and it has no gain, of no value in the hereafter, stop. There's no need. Okay. Now, here, in this regard of unnecessary talking and unnecessary preoccupying yourself with futile talk, Ayatollah Hasanzada Omuli has written in this regard, and I want to read a few pages from one of his books, which he enters this in some detail. He says, during the early hours of Sunday the 12th of Jamadil Awwal, 1389 after Hijrah, which is the 27th of July 1969, after executing the nightly Nafila prayers and the obligatory and Nafila morning prayers, I was occupied in a 40-day spiritual mantra that entailed reciting the majestic expression Allah a specific number of times after the morning prayer. After the reciting, I sat in a state of tawajjuh, where I'm attentive, wholly attentive to Allah. And He's the first, He's the last, He's the out and in of all things. In such a state, disassociating from all world, at least worldly idols, I sat in a state of tawajjuh, when all of a sudden an attraction and state encountered me, where the body shivered and led to a sound that was similar to, by way of example, the sound made when a tractor passes over large stones on an uneven road. I saw my spirit disassociating from the body and elevating within a body like that observed in the realm of sleep. So he's in a metaphysical realm now, in a heavenly realm, or in a metaphysical realm for now. It elevated to a certain extent. I then saw myself amidst the house whose girders, the framework, were all wooden and carpeted. But this is a metaphysical reality. But you can tell from the context, it's a dimension of hell. A house, not a physical house, in a metaphysical house. It was wooden, not physical wood. Amidst the house whose girders were all wooden and carpeted. However, I was like a bird which is captivated in a house, flying from side to side, but not finding a way out. I was bothered in such a state for roughly a quarter of an hour, rushing from left to right. I saw that I was imprisoned in the house and I wasn't able to flee from it. It was then that I heard a talk from a speaker, without actually seeing him, who said to me that your imprisonment is a result of excessive and futile talking. Why don't you observe your words? He wasn't saying haram talk, but Ayatollah Hasan Zadeh, Amuli, Hafadahullah, on a par with his high spiritual level, here, things which are normal for me and you may be futile for him. And if he wants to attain to high levels of heavens, this futile contamination of his soul has to be purified before he gets to that level. And therefore he's purifying it in this world by having visions of that level of hell, which can act as a barrier for him to acquire higher levels of heaven in the hereafter. In that state, I asked Allah several times to save me by the life of the seal of prophets, falling down, beseeching and lamenting before him. All of a sudden, my eyes fell towards the north of the house, where there was a window with enough space for one person to flee through it, and so I did. After leaving the place, I was in flight again towards the east in the direction of the Qibla, so he flee from it. He became pure from that suffering he was experiencing, and he did it by intercession through the Holy Messenger. The messenger is a manifestation of Allah's attribute. The enemy will despair. Why don't the enemy despair by other tyrannical so-called Islamic leaders today in the world? Actually, they love them. The disbelievers love them. They love to work with them. They love to trade with them. But with the Islamic revolution, they can't. And they're in despair. This is a great success for Muslims. If only we would realize the importance of such a revolution, what it's doing, and how it's helping the cause of Messianism and Mahdawiyya, if only we would realize. Just because we're suffering in many parts of the world, it doesn't mean we're not in control. We're independent. And you should fall into and you should participate with the cause, with the Islamic revolution. This is something pivotal for your hereafter. What kind of CV are you going to take with yourself in the hereafter? Then the verse continues that those disbelievers will be in despair. فَلَا تَخْشَوْهُمْ. Don't be scared of them. وَخْشَوْنِ. Fear me. And you're going to succeed. If day after day, even today, 1400 years on, you have the potential to see the ni'mah of your time, the imam of your time. And chapter 5, verse 3, abiding by the esoteric prescriptions behind the physical entities mentioned, that is a prescription of Messianism. Okay, so here, prohibited over you is blood. It's prohibited is for you to be an animal, to be infiltrated and penetrated by animalistic traits. You're far beyond that. You have to be a human. You have to be a human. Okay. Now, we have other traditions that read, and Sayyid Haider Omri has brought them, that in the month of Ramadan, Futihat Abwabul Jannah, the doors of heavens open up before you. وَقُلِقَتْ أَبْوَابُ النَّارِ, the doors of hell will be locked before you. وَصُفِّدَتْ الشَّيَاطِينَ, and the Satans will be incarcerated, captivated, locked up. They don't have access to you. وَنَادَ مُنَادٍ يَا بَاغِيَ الْخَيْرِ, then a caller will call out, O seeker of truth, halumma, come, come towards this truth. وَيَا بَاغِيَ الشَّرِ, O seeker of vice, أَقْسِر, which means, O seeker of vice, restrict yourself, constrict yourself, stop it. And so what does it mean that the shayateen are incarcerated? And these are traditions we have and they're explicit. Remember in the introduction when I said, as long as you forget Allah, if you forget Allah in proportion to how much you forget Allah, you'll be under the sovereignty of Iblis. Iblis will come with his temptations your way. But this is cause and effect. Now, in the month of Ramadan, if you forget Allah, Iblis will not come your way with temptations. Except if you sin. Because not recalling Allah has many applications. One of them is actually sinning according to the Sharia. If that happens, everything breaks loose. You shouldn't sin according to the Sharia. But if you're not constantly invoking Allah during the day, you won't be encountered with satanic temptations. But outside the month of Ramadan, you would be. And the more you forget Allah, even though you're not sinning, you would encounter satanic temptations. And then eventually you're going to fall and give in to them. In the month of Ramadan, even if you forget Allah and you don't constantly invoke Him, as long as you don't sin, Shaitan won't come your way. So why do we continue sinning in the month of Ramadan? It's because of what preceded the month of Ramadan. The contaminations that we incorporated before the month of Ramadan, polluting our immaterial dimension, and thus putting ourselves, assigning ourselves under the Iblisi sovereignty. And therefore that continues after the month starts, the month of Ramadan starts too. And you still continue your ways and you won't benefit at all from the month of Ramadan. So this is something, we have an opportunity here and we have to make the most out of it. Now, Sayyid Haider Omri here only touched upon the physical dimension of hunger. But the reality, and that's important. I mean, we have many traditions in this regard. I'll just recite one or two of them. But then, this is on a par with the Sharia, this hunger aspect. This lack of drinking, lack of eating, lack of satiating your sexual appetite, and so on and so forth. But fasting, as we said, has levels, and it entails much more. And we can grow much more. We'll come to that in a minute. But just a few ahadith on the importance of not filling your stomachs, not overeating. The Holy Messenger said, مَا مَلَأَ آدَمِيٌ وِعَاءً شَرًّا مِنْ بَطْنِهِ, there's no vessel or container worse than to fill than the container of your stomachs. When you fill your stomachs, you're preoccupying you're over preoccupying your souls. And that soul is preoccupied now. It's not free to be a recipient of higher truths. You've made it, you've locked it down in this physical realm with physical food. And the Holy Messenger has also said, لَا يَدْخُلُ مَلَكُوتَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ مَنْ مَلَأَ بَتْنَا. One who fills one's stomach, overfills it, they won't enter the metaphysical realms of the cosmos. They won't be able to transcend. They're held back because of the food preoccupations and so on and so forth. Or another tradition from Amir al-Mu'mineen, لَيْسَ شَيْءٌ أَضَرَّ عَلَىٰ قَلْبِ الْمُؤْمِنِ مِنْ كَثْرَةِ الْأَكْلِ. That there's nothing more harmful to the believer's heart than overeating. And this overeating, وَهِيَ مُورِثَةٌ لِشَيْعَيْنِ. You'll inherit two things by overeating. قَسْوَةِ الْقَلْبِ, your heart becomes stone hardened, you become stone hearted. وحيجان الشهوة, and your shahwa, your lusts and whims will be precipitated, aggravated. And there are many traditions in this regard. So this not having food and experiencing physical hunger does have benefits to it. And one can speak a lot about food and eating less, but I'll withdraw for now, and we may come to it another time. Okay, however, as we said, there are many degrees to fasting. And in addition to refraining from physical food and drink, refraining from functions of the stomach, or functions of only the stomach or genitalia or other specific limbs, we have to fast in relation to all our limbs. All the faculties of our bodies have to fast. And they have to do that in the month of Ramadan. But this having to do that, this must, this obligation, is an obligation assigned by the tariqa, the spirit of the law. If you don't, you'll be contaminated, but you won't burn for it. But if you get over-contaminated and it reaches a certain threshold, by committing these tariqa sins, then you would make yourself susceptible to falling short, even in relation to the Sharia. And then that will make you commit sins of the Sharia, and that you will be punished for in the hereafter. Now here there's a hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that reads, Inna siyama لَيْسَ مِنَ الطَّعَامِ وَالشَّرَابِ وَحْدَهِ. This fasting, it isn't just in relation to refraining from eating and drinking only. That's not fasting. Rather, إِنَّمَا لِلصَّوْمِ شَرْطٌ. Verily, for fasting, there's a prerequisite. There's a condition. That يَحْتَاجُ أَيُّهْفَذَ حَتَّى يَتِمَّ الصَّوْمِ. And that prerequisite has to be abided by until that psalm becomes perfected. So that the fasting becomes perfected, this condition has to be or needs to be preserved. If this condition is not preserved, your fasting will not be complete, and therefore you've compromised with your fasting. And then when you compromise with your fasting, your fast may be on a par with the fasts of those before us in previous Sharias. So now the question is, what is this condition that needs to be preserved so that our fast is a complete fast, a perfect fast? وَهُوَ, if that condition is, أَسَّمْتُ الدَّاخِلِ, inner silence. What does inner silence mean? Because when you refrain from physical food, that physical food isn't part of you. When you avoid physical water or physical other things, they are things which are other than you. They're not part of you. But fasting, in addition to refraining from those physical things which are outside your body, now let's focus on our own body, our outer limbs and our inner limbs, but these are all in unity with us. These have to be silenced also. Look, these have to be silenced. In the same way that you silence yourself from physical food, you have to silence your limbs on a par with those limbs. Each limb silences itself, be it an outer limb, an outer faculty, or be it an inner or inner limb or inner faculty. But each faculty has a mode of being silenced. It's only when you do this, now you're entering the valley of the true fasters. Now you're entering the spirit of fasting. Now you qualify as one who is perfecting their fast. You're growing here. Then the Imam gives a reference for this statement that inner silence is the attribute. He can forgive. You can intercede through him. After becoming free from and leaving the house, I perceived the house as extremely large and luxurious, situated amidst a garden that had no boundaries and was filled with a vast diversity of trees full of white blossoms, a scene I had never witnessed in my whole life. This is a heavenly scene. I saw myself flying in the air at an altitude of the height of those trees in a manner whereby my anterior aspect was facing the skies whilst my posterior was facing earth. I would undergo peaks and troughs in accordance with my will, endeavor and command. I asked Almighty Allah by the right of the Holy Prophet and all prophets to unveil truths to me, and it was then that I returned to my normal state. Those few minutes of imprisonment had an extremely negative effect upon me, to such an extent that my physical body became tired and exhausted, as well as my head and shoulders being in severe pain and my heart pulsating heavily. Even though it wasn't a bodily journey, but when he came back in the normal consciousness, when he came back to his normal state, the body was taking its toll. Oh, my dear, Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh says, attach point number 320 of my book, 1001 Points, firmly onto your ears. And that is, one of the people of love with whom I was in friendship during muraqabah and self-scrutiny of the soul, muraqabah is a spiritual tool in spiritual wayfaring, had attained access to the prophetic tradition, where the Prophet says, whoever sees me in their dreams has verily seen me. After all, the shaitan does not appear as me. Here, this means he had a vision of the Prophet, this disciple of love, had a vision of the Prophet. And then this person asked His Eminence, the Holy Prophet, for a mantra. His Eminence replied, I give you the mantra of silence. Now, the more you elevate in your spirituality, this mantra of silence is on a par with your spiritual elevation. If you haven't elevated at all, start with silencing your tongue from the haram things and then grow more and more. But as you grow, if any futile talk comes your way, it's going to take a burden onto your soul. And that won't allow you to reach high levels in heaven unless you acquire the opportunity to purify yourself in this world through visions of hell, that barzakhi hell, so that on entering after physical death, that higher degree of heaven be granted to you. Inshallah, we'll continue with another incident of Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh and other forms of silencing other limbs of the body in the next session. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala tahirin.